This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Greetings to all our atheist, agnostic, and open-minded listeners of any and every persuasion. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. This is the weekend of August the 7th, 2010.
Free Thought Radio is broadcasting in Madison, Wisconsin. We're airing also in Atlanta, Anchorage, Grand Rapids, Monterey, and podcasting everywhere, and our webmaster just sent me an email saying we've reached the 2 million mark podcasting.
2 million people have listened to the show on podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Thank you for listening. Free Thought Radio is a weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Get that right, not Freedom of Religion, which we're in favor of, but the name of our group is the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We are non-believers, mainly atheists and agnostics and other types of religious skeptics and doubters who are personally free from religion in our personal lives and who also think that the government should be free from religion at the official level. So we educate about non-theism and we also work to keep state and church separate.
And there are many famous non-believers, and I don't know how many of our listeners realize that one of the world's greatest philanthropists, William Buffett, appears to be a non-believer.
And your mother, Ann, told me a joke on the phone last night. If he were doing our show instead of us, he would be testing the mic, not by saying, testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, 1, 2, 3. He'd be saying, testing, 1 billion, 2 billion, 3 billion.
But all going to, it seems like most of it going to charity. Our guest on the second half of today's program is Ann Helms. She's a lifetime member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, who happens to be the daughter of the famous photographer Ansel Adams. And so we'll talk with Ann Helms a bit about her dad, her life, what she's been doing to manage his artistic exhibits, among other things, and of course, her own views on religion, why she is a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And it's timely because Ansel Adams has been in the news recently, not him personally, but his artwork, his photography. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Also on today's show, we'll celebrate the birthday of the 19th century's most famous American non-believer, Robert G. Ingersoll. He was born on August the 11th, 1833. And if you don't know who he is, we'll fill you in on his accomplishments. If you're already a fan, we have some treats in store to pay Robert G. Ingersoll some secular homage.
As usual, first some news. This is a quick alert that next week, on August 9th or thereabouts, the Freedom From Religion Foundation will be placing a mini blitz of 30 billboards throughout Tampa, Florida.
And there'll be several of the Freedom From Religion Foundation's favorite billboard designs, including Imagine No Religion. But we're going to debut a brand new billboard message that we think is going to be a hit. The message is, "In Reason We Trust," and shows the top half of a penny with that phrase on it. And of course, "In Reason We Trust" is a remark to "In God We Trust."
And it's a very arresting design, and we think it will create quite a buzz. And these are the first FFF RF billboards to go up in Florida, so that will be fun.
Some sunshine in the Sunshine State.
And we'll also next week be putting up our first billboard placement in New Jersey. Has been a neglected state, in Monmouth County, and they'll get a red, white, and blue God and government, a dangerous mix message. Not a mixed message. And we'll follow up with a mini blitz of billboards in New Orleans in mid-August. It will be the first time we put up a billboard to pay homage to Butterfly McQueen. We have had her on some bus signs, and Butterfly McQueen is was a lifetime member of the foundation. She was the actress so painfully typecast as the role of the slave Prissy in Gone with the Wind, but she was a lifetime unbeliever and had said, "As my ancestors are free from slavery, I am free from the slavery of religion." And Butterfly was born in Louisiana, so we're going to be putting billboards with her image in Louisiana, also in Atlanta. A heads up to you listeners in Atlanta that there'll be a blitz of billboards going up in early September, and Butterfly McQueen ended up living in Atlanta.
She didn't know nothing about birth and no babies, but she did know there is no God. So stay tuned. We're going to have plans on more Free Thought Media messages to the masses, the critical masses. Now back to our constitutional bread and butter cases. As we talked about on other shows and previous shows, the foundation and its legal staff had advised the city of Woodruff, South Carolina, that its city council-sponsored prayers to Jesus violate the law, specifically court precedent by the Supreme Court and several strong rulings in that Fourth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals, of which South Carolina is a part.
And did they listen to reason?
No.
They did not trust in reason.
You might recall that the mayor gave a long prayer in reaction to our letter that we played on a previous Free Thought Radio broadcast.
Lord, it is the people who you've appointed that are in power. And Lord, whether we like that or not, Father, those people are in positions of responsibility, and they have a responsibility to govern and act honorably before all men. And I pray in the name of Jesus, Father, that you would help us to make right choices and right decisions. And us as a body to know that we're not making a decision just for ourselves, but the decisions that we make affect the lives of many, many people.
That's a city council meeting,
that's
believe it
mayor.
Or not. Earlier this week, that city council voted unanimously and without discussion, not only to continue to hold prayer, but to direct those prayers, unconstitutionally, by the way, toward a particular deity, in this case, Jesus. Well, we have a clip of coverage of this development by WPAS News 7, News 7 and CBS, out of Spartanburg, South Carolina.
The First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution spells out the separation of church and state. Prayer at government meetings is walking a thin line. Some cities have been over it and lost. Others have won. The Woodruff City Council is hoping if challenged, they too will win. They voted tonight to continue invocations before meetings.
And I think continuing prayer is one of the greatest things and the strongest thing for our community.
The city spelled out a clear policy on how to handle the issue. The mayor says they'll do a better job of seeking diverse voices for invocation.
Both inclusion of a broad cross-section of our community and freedom of expression are very, very important to us in this community.
But there's no policy change in regards to eliminating Christian terminology, which was one of the main sticking points for opponents.
If they opened with a prayer that didn't name a specific deity or with a moment of silence, it would solve all the issues.
How a new policy does change when that prayer will take place.
We will actually change the agenda to show that the invocation will be given before the gavel sounds for the official business session.
Also new, at the bottom of all future council agendas will be a disclaimer that reads in part, "The views or beliefs by the invocation speaker do not represent the religious beliefs or views of the council in part or as a whole." In essence, they're trying to make it clearer the governing body is not pushing one religion on anyone.
Well, this is Alliance Defense Fund's terminology. They're a religious right group. They think that if you have a council vote on a policy to have prayer, including Christian prayer, but specifically vote that they'll do it before the gavel sounds, that somehow that doesn't make it city speech, and it does. So we're looking into what we can do about this. It's just sort of a flagrant violation.
Well, so it's on the agenda that the prayer will happen before the agenda.
That's
so
right.
It's part of the agenda. We're also embroiled in another controversy in the Deep South. That sounds like we're deep fried, doesn't it? Another controversy in the Deep South, this time over creationism in the schools. At a July 22nd meeting of the Livingston Parish School Board in Louisiana, school board member David Tate said, "We let them teach evolution to our children, but I think all of us sitting up here on this school board believe in creationism. Why can't we get someone with religious beliefs to teach creationism?"
And did you say this is in Louisiana, Dan?
Yep. Okay. The comment came after the district's curriculum director, outlined the 2009 Louisiana Science Education Act, which says in part, a teacher shall teach the material presented in the standard textbook supplied by the school system and thereafter may use supplemental textbooks and other instructional materials to help students understand, analyze, critique, and review scientific theories. Opponents of the law see this as opening a back door just enough to let creationism slip in. After the curriculum director's presentation, two board members said they agreed about teaching theories other than evolution in science classes. Three area residents then contacted us, the Freedom From Religion Foundation. On their behalf, our attorney, Rebecca Marker, wrote a letter of complaint August 3rd to the district. Quote, it's unconstitutional for a public school board to include creationism in the curriculum, Marker said, citing a U.S. Supreme Court case that struck down an older Louisiana law allowing, quote, creation science to be taught. The new law would not fare any better from a constitutional standpoint, she said. Markert noted that board members' positive reaction to Tate's proposal made it clear that considering the addition of creationism to the school district science curriculum is fueled by religious motives. Board member David Tate told the Baton Rouge Advocate last week, we don't want litigation, but why not take a stand for Jesus and risk litigation? He added, creationism is just another thought of how things came into being. Give every theory due time in the classroom. He said, we don't all have to believe the same thing. Our staff attorney, Rebecca Markert, said the board would do well to remember that even if Mr. Tate's assertion is true that all members of the school board believe in creationism, the board represents the interests of a much more diverse population within Livingston Parish. Any board member who feels passionately about the merits of creationism is free to teach that viewpoint to his or her own children or to ask that it be taught in their church. The public at large need not be involved.
Well, and if Mr. Tate's assertion is true that all members of the school board are creationists, is that ever a terrible commentary on that parish aptly named in Louisiana? And we also said that, you know, they're trying to inject religious dogma into the science curriculum under the guise of critical thinking, which is totally oxymoronic. Dogmatic thought, in fact, is the opposite of critical thought. So after some of this, listening to some of this folly, we want to devote the next segment of Free Thought Radio to rationalism and celebrating the life of rationalist Robert G. Ingersoll, born August 11th, 1833.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and you're listening to Free Thought Radio, and we'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Karen Park. I'm from the Atlanta, Georgia area, and I know that religion makes absolutely no sense.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
The time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. The way to be happy is to make others happy. The time to be happy is now.
Oh, those are the words of famous infidel orator Robert G. Ingersoll, put to music by my co-host Dan Barker, who was singing with a backup chorus of very cute kids, from the music CD Friendly Neighborhood Atheist, produced by FFRF.
And this week we're celebrating the birthday of Robert Greene Ingersoll, which is on August the 11th. He was born in 1833, so what would this be, his 170-something birthday? August 11th is a date often marked by freethinkers around the country with picnics and get-togethers and just a lot of free thought fun.
And most people, if you ask them who Robert Greene Ingersoll is, don't have the faintest idea, but in the 1800s, he was one of the most famous men in North America. He was a famous orator, silver-tongued, and everybody wanted to hear him, whether they were religious or not religious. He used to stand on the podium and at some points was famous for saying, well, you know, if blaspheming God and let him be struck by lightning, people would come and see that he wasn't. But he gave many lectures on free thought, but also famous for his lectures on Shakespeare, Robert Burns. This was in the era with no radio, no TV, no internet, and he was an entertainer. And he had as many as 10,000 people turn out and pay money to hear him in Chicago, for example, speaking without a microphone.
For 2 or 3 hours, just standing and listening to him.
And and this was the age of great orators, and he was known as one of the best. Mark Twain felt he was the best. He was beloved by reformers and feminists and suffragists. And but he was also an attorney, and he took some very famous cases, and he won famous cases. He didn't just do free thought, but he defended blasphemers. And there's a whole set of Dresden. It's 12 volume, the Dresden edition of his works and writings
on
and speeches.
On many, many different topics.
And very beloved family man and very beloved to this day.
And a lot of people have a history of when they were young, historical people. Margaret Sanger, for example, when she was a little girl.
Remembered hearing him speak.
And
so did Bob La Follette.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was a huge... one of the highlights of people's lives was to hear him speak.
And the way he put words together was so eloquent and so beautiful. In the novel Elmer Gantry by Sinclair Lewis, the young preacher, you know, that Burt Lancaster played, the oily preacher, he was trying to find some words for his very first sermon, and his agnostic roommate had some of the works of Ingersoll. So he opened it up, and he found this recitation about love. And so he based his first evangelical sermon on the beautiful words of Robert G. Ingersoll, the words love.
And he was known as the great agnostic.
Well, for a treat, we realized that there was a movie, and maybe this is a little trivia question. What movie actually quoted Robert G. Ingersoll? There's a critically acclaimed movie in 1950. The movie is called Born Yesterday. And we're going to play a little bit for you. It has a long quotation from Ingersoll. The character who's portrayed by William Holden is talking with Judy Holliday. She's the actress, and she's this girlfriend of a gangster. And so he's been hired to give her some cultural education, and he's taking her around. And here he is in Washington, D.C. He's taking her into the National Art Gallery to talk about culture and art. And they sit down on a couch, and she asks him some questions.
You know that little thing you gave me about Napoleon?
No, what?
By Robert G. Ingersoll?
Oh, yes.
Well, I'm not sure I get that. He says about how he goes and looks in Napoleon's tomb.
Yeah.
And he thinks of Napoleon's whole sad life.
Yeah.
And then in the end, he says he himself would have rather been a happy farmer.
And I said I would rather have been a French peasant and worn wooden shoes. I would rather have lived in a hut with a vine growing over the door and the grapes growing purple in the kisses of the autumn sun. I would rather have been that poor peasant with my loving wife by my side, knitting as the day died out of the sky, with my children upon my knee and their arms about me. I would rather have been that man and gone down to the tongueless silence of the dreamless dust than to have been that imperial impression of force and murder known as Napoleon the Great.
That was William Holden reciting the words of Robert G. Ingersoll in that very good movie, Born Yesterday.
And by the way, that's just an excerpt of a wonderful recitation that Ingersoll wrote about when he was standing at the tomb of Napoleon, comparing him with the average folk.
And Ingersoll wrote many recitations, many famous speeches, and also some poems. And one of his most famous poem that gets widely quoted is called The Declaration of the Free. And many years ago, Dan, we asked you to put it to music. So let's go out with as much of that as we can listen to.
Robert Ingersoll, the great agnostic orator.
We have no falsehoods to defend. We want the facts. Our force, our thought, we do not spend in vain attacks. And we will never meanly try to save some fair and pleasing lie. We will not willingly be fooled by fables nursed. Our hearts by earnest thought are schooled to bear the worst. And we can stand erect and dare all things, all facts that really are. We have no gods to serve or fear, no hell to shun, no devil with malicious leer when life is done. And endless sleep may close our eyes, a sleep with neither dreams nor sighs.
My name is Lee from Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
We have no master on the land, no king in air. Without a manacle, we stand without a prayer.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with Dan Barker, and we have guests today from the Monterey area. We're broadcasting in the Monterey, so that's very fitting.
Anne and Ken Helms actually live in Salinas, which is their house is between Salinas and Monterey. And we're happy to have both of you on the telephone today. Welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If our listeners were listening to the first half of the show, we introduced that Anne is the daughter of Ansel Adams, the famous photographer, and Ken is the famous son-in-law of Ansel Adams. He's also a photographer as well. You have a business card that jokingly says, "Hire me. I'm son-in-law of Ansel Adams,"
which with I know.
With no address, yeah. It's cute. Anne got a degree in English
from Stanford,
and also she got a master's in anthropology, San Francisco State University, is that right?
That's right.
Right, so a varied interest, and we want to talk a bit about your life and what you've been doing, and you too, Ken, because Ken is a former minister who has a good story to tell.
Well, Unitarian.
Yeah, but we'll
makes
we'll
a difference, Dan.
I know it makes a difference, but we'll get to that. Even that was a bit too religious for him, and we'll talk about that too. But Anne, of course, your famous father has been in the news recently, and you, Anne, are a lifetime member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and your father, we understand, or maybe you can tell us, his views were pretty free-thinking. Isn't that true?
I believe they were. It's not something that we talked a lot about. And I looked through some of the books in preparation for this, and in the indexes I could find nothing about religion or spirituality. That may reflect what the indexer felt was important. But early in his life, Ansel would occasionally use the term "God was watching" when I pushed the shutter. But I think he really described himself in one of these as a liberalist. I'm not sure what that means. But he studied philosophical religions based on moral truths and a firm sense of personal quest. And, of course, nature was what was very important to him. And perhaps that was a spiritual, whatever it spiritual means, a spiritual experience for him.
Well, I found a clip of your dad talking in which he says some of his friends were able to see what he called mystical elements in the work, and he didn't. He just saw it as a feeling. Do you have that clip, Brian, that we can just play? Just about 20 seconds.
I can't verbalize on the internal meaning of pictures whatsoever. Some of my friends can at very mystical levels, but I prefer to say that if I feel something strongly, I would make a photograph that would be the equivalent of what I saw and felt.
So it was, I think you agree, it was a natural thing that your dad was doing then.
Yes. I'd like to mention that a very dear friend of mine, Anne Hammond, wrote a whole book on Ansel's life called Divine Performance, which was published by Yale University Press. And she was a meticulous researcher, and she looked through Ansel's library and found a lot of things on theosophy and kind of carried forward with that as if that was important for the rest of his life, which I happen to disagree with.
Well, what would you know? You're just the daughter, you know.
Well, I do remember him being kind of, I don't want to say snide, but very dismissive of several of very dear friends who did go off on a mystical way. He just didn't buy it.
And what about you and your views? How did you become, were you raised without religion?
There was a little community church in Yosemite when I went to Sunday school and learned to say Bible things. And then I got sent to a convent high school for high school. But that wasn't because it was a Catholic school, which my family was not. It was because it had a very good music department. And at that point, my family had hopes for music to be a career.
That's right. You're a piano player. You're a pianist.
Well, I took lessons on the piano. There's a big difference. But at one point, I did want to become a Catholic. The ritual appealed to me. Now I'm sort of baffled by that because ritual does not appeal to me, and I'm very uncomfortable with things like the word worship. And that's probably why one of the reasons I dropped out of the Unitarian Church, because it became so much more churchy.
And can we backpedal a little bit? And you talked about growing up in Yosemite.
Yes.
And well, tell us what that was like.
Fabulous. But, of course, I took it for granted because that's how life was. But it's part of my personality, I guess, or soul or whatever, because it's a very important place to me.
You still have a house there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the house we grew up in is still there, although we don't use it. The family has a cabin up in Yosemite West, which is 20 minutes from the floor of the valley, and it's a private enclave surrounded by national parks. So that's very
beautiful.
Peaceful and quiet.
Well, your own house is beautiful. We've been lucky to be guests in your home on at least one twice, I think, and I can still picture that beautiful piano by that beautiful window looking out over the valley there. Where is it, Castle Rock, where John Steinbeck was?
Right. Yes.
And then, of course, your house is like an art gallery with pictures of your dad's pictures all over the wall. Your dad wanted to be a concert pianist, isn't that right? And didn't he compare photography to music or something?
Well, both of those things. He started taking lessons when he was 12 and apparently progressed very rapidly and had great determination and, 8 hours a day practicing and did very well. And then for the next 15 years, he sort of went back and forth between whether photography or music should be his career. And ultimately, as we know, photography won.
Well, a good thing, I guess.
Yeah. particularly if you saw his arthritic fingers. He would have not been able to play the piano very well.
Now, what I remember being shown at your house or running across was an absolutely enchanting children's book that your dad did featuring you and your brother.
That's right. It's called Michael and Anne in Yosemite Valley, and it was published in 1940 when we were 5 and 7, I think. And it is charming.
It's a photography book of you children in Yosemite.
A little story about life in Yosemite.
Is that a collector's item if I find one?
Yes, it is. I occasionally try to find one on eBay because I want all of our grandchildren to have copies.
Well, I keep thinking that it could be reprinted.
Well, we've talked about that and not gotten a good response. In fact, it was kind of funny. At one point, some editor looked at one of the pictures. Ken, can I say this? there is me as a little girl sitting... sitting on this Indian grinding rock showing how the Indians used to grind acorns. And I have a little dress on. My legs are spread. And somebody said, not pornographic, but they felt it was a lascivious kind of picture, which I think says more about that person.
Well, I think so, because I've read that book.
that is not what the case is. And I think there are also criticisms because I kind of followed my brother around. Well, 75 years ago, that's kind of how little girls did.
Well, we're going to take a break, Anne, and come back. But after the break, I want to, your dad was into music, And then your daughter has become a musician, a well-known musician, Virginia Mayhew. In fact, I have one of her CDs. She's a highly respected jazz saxophonist. And I want to talk a little bit about her when we come back. But let's go out of the segment playing a little one of her tunes. What is the tune we have?
Sandan Shuffle.
Sandan Shuffle. And then when we come back, let's talk a little bit about, a little more with Ann Helms, who's the daughter of Ansel Adams, and her husband Ken, who's on the phone. We're not ignoring you, but we'll be right back after this break.
Hi, my name is Liz Liddell. I'm from Peoria, Illinois, and I work with the Secular Student Alliance, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and that's saxophonist Virginia Mayhew playing tenderly, very tenderly. Virginia Mayhew is the granddaughter of Ansel Adams, the daughter of one of us today, Ann Helms, who's on the phone with us from the Monterey area. She's a freethinker, a lifetime member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We also have on the phone with us Ken Helms, her husband, who's a former Unitarian minister, so welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
I want to say something. Anne, your daughter's music is just genius. And,
Thank you.
I have that CD, by the way. And she's been compared to Sonny Rollins and Dexter Gordon. They're very serious, not just a player, but a band leader and a writer and an arranger. And listeners who are paying attention might notice that that song was being played in 5/8 time, which is a very daring thing to do. And before that, the Sandan Shuffle was in 7/8. Time,
yes, she does very complex rhythms.
So did she get that from you or from your dad?
Your dad was
musically trained.
He was as a concert musician. I mean, as a classical musician. And he really didn't understand jazz, but he was so impressed with Jenny's dedication and seriousness that he was very supportive of her going that way.
If people want more of her music, they can go to her website, which is virginiamayhew.com. That's right,
and thank you for mentioning that.
Mayhew, virginiamayhew.com.
And I know that you and Ken were in Greece this year because there was an exhibit of your father's photographs.
Right.
And now you're saying that that's up in the Monterey Museum.
Right, and when it leaves here, it's going to Peoria, Illinois, that museum, the Lakeview Museum in Peoria, is going to circulate it around the United States.
And what's in the exhibit?
There's 72 photographs, and this museum set, Ansel, at the very end of his life, felt that there were so many museums that had not started seriously collecting photography as a fine art. And so this was to encourage museums to get a selection, or in some cases, philanthropists would buy them with the understanding that they must ultimately donate them. So these pictures could never be on the open market. But they're representative of what Ansel thought were his most important and favorite photographs.
Sounds beautiful.
It is. It's just a wonderful exhibit.
It is your personal collection, isn't it, Anna?
Yes.
You and your brother both have one.
Is there a website people can go to find out where this exhibit is going to be going after Peoria?
I don't think that's been settled yet.
Okay. Well, I'm assuming there'll be a way to find out. And then can we ask how you and Ken met?
My first husband had died, and the Unitarian Church community was very important to me at that time. And when they were ready to look for a new minister, and after I'd been widowed for a few years and gotten through the grieving process, I jokingly said, well, why don't you bring back a nice, young, handsome, unmarried one? And what do you know? They did. And so Ken was the minister in Redwood City for 3 years. And he left for a while to figure out what the next part of his life was. And then we got married.
So, Ken, welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Well, thank you very much.
So you were a minister. Was this a case of personal evangelism carried a bit far?
Yeah. I was trying to de-evangelize the Unitarian Universalists.
And you left the ministry then?
Yes, I left the ministry after that, both because Anne did not want to take her girls traveling around the world with me as a minister, but secondly, by that time I had come, as I had come from out of my originally fundamentalist background and finally into Unitarianism, I kept reading church history, which is which the bishop in the Methodist church I served told me that was a mistake, stop doing it, and decided I wasn't religious. I'm a humanist and an atheist, and that's what my interest is now. I work with the American Humanist Association, and we have our own chapter here.
Sounds great.
So you found a higher calling, I guess it is.
I don't know if it's higher, but it seems much more a human to me, and humanistic and human-centered on our needs and aspirations as people.
Yeah. And you worked in anthropology then for a while as well.
Well, actually, I didn't. After my first husband died, as a sideline, he'd been running this little family publishing business that produced photographic notes and postcards and some souvenir items for Yosemite. And when he died very suddenly, somebody had to take it over, so I did. And I did okay with it, but at one point I thought I wanted to go back to school, so I was trying to do both. And I had a wonderful time going to school. But the business nearly folded while I was off trying to learn more. And my degree had an emphasis on the Middle East, so I did a handbook for ESL student teachers of Arab students. So it was a great experience, but then I never had a chance to do any more with it because I really had to get back and mind the store.
And what is the name of the store?
Museum Graphics.
Museum Graphics?
My daughter runs it now. And it's AnselAdams.org is the website for
okay.
that.
So people can go to AnselAdams.org and buy photographs, bookmarks, that kind of
thing?
Well,
not photographs, notes and postcards and things like that.
Uh-huh. Well, that we'll have to look that up. Very beautiful, I'm sure.
Yes.
So these exhibits around the world, the exhibits that you go to, are you involved in the planning or do you just show up and...
There is some planning. It's each museum can choose how they're going to sequence the exhibit. Our arrangement was that we wouldn't charge rent for this, which usually they would have to pay a big sum for it. But as long as they covered the insurance and the freight and gave us business class tickets to the destination and a couple of nights accommodation, they could have the show. So it was a good deal for them, and it was a good deal for us.
Yeah. So you do an immense amount of traveling.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
You've been all over the world with this?
Well, a lot in Europe and then New Zealand. It was going to go to China, but our Chinese friend said, after thinking about it, she really wasn't sure that there were the right facilities and experience with fine photography. And so... They bought some
reproduction
special edition prints, which are made from Ansel's negatives, but don't have the same value that they would have to worry about.
And where was it in New Zealand?
In New Zealand, it was at the Christchurch Art Gallery.
Mm-hmm. We were just there a few months ago in Christchurch, but not in that gallery. Well, your dad... enriched the world, not just in art, in photography, which was beautiful and creative, but also really inspired the kind of early environmental feelings about protecting the wilderness and the country and all of that. So we owe a lot to his love for nature.
Yes, well, he said that while he never took a photograph for an environmental purpose, he was delighted that they often got used for that. And in fact, his photographs of the Kings Canyon area in California were really instrumental in getting that put aside as a national park.
Well, that's quite a legacy.
It is.
Well, we are delighted that you could both join us today and talk about your dad, Ansel Adams, and what's been going on. And thank you so much.
And it all has to do with light, Ken, and it's a good thing you saw the light.
Yeah, maybe it's the light. I don't know. It's just this beautiful world that I see every day in love.
Wow. We enjoyed the conversation.
Well, thank you. We're talking with Ann and Ken Helms. Ann is the daughter of the photographer Ansel Adams, and Ken is a retired Unitarian minister who saw the light.
And look up the family business at anseladams.org. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
We also want to thank our engineer and our producer. His name is Brian Tirani for his great yeoman's work producing our show. We want to thank our announcer, Buzz Kemper. To listen to archives of our show, go to ffrf.org/radio. And then also you can sign up for the podcast or just go to iTunes and look for Free Thought Radio as a podcast.
Ask for more information about the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join us. Ask for a sample issue of the August Free Thought Today by calling 1-800-335-4021 or just go to ffrf.org and click send me information or become a member, and we'd be glad to sign you up. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday